Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show, streaming on BBS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally and numerous podcast platforms. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silver. If we haven't met, my mission is uplifting the spirit of humanity. And I do that by showcasing amazing women who've risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph, from a point of chaos to confidence, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and often globally as well. Now, as a female founder and entrepreneur, a certified executive coach and chartered HR professional, I've helped thousands of people find excellent career choices, and in the past 10 years in particular, supported senior women to excel in their leadership and especially in their confidence. I have a passion for conversation. So today I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are ready to flourish in business, to expand and engage their team, grow their business with ideal clients and more sales, for a sustainable business that is fun. Because we can have balance as female entrepreneurs and be great role models for our children. And I'm delighted today that my guest, Deanna Burghardt, will be joining us, who is definitely someone I consider to be a fantastic role model, as she is the only female engineer, Indigenous engineer, that I know. So hello, Deanna.
Hi, Yvonne. Thanks so much for having me.
You are very welcome. I am thrilled that we've had the opportunity, because it seems a long time since we first met in person and had a chance to talk together last year at the Evolutionary Business Council annual retreat down in San Diego. That seems a long time ago, doesn't it?
It sure does. And so much has happened in the time past, I think, for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah, the whole world's upside down right now, but we're figuring it out. So Deanna Burghardt, by way of a sort of more of a formal introduction, if you aren't familiar with her, she is a Calgary resident as well. She's the president for Indigenous Engineering Inclusion, Inc. And Deanna is an experienced speaker, trainer, engineer, and mentor who has a particular talent for identifying gaps and providing solutions to systemic, organizational, and transformational change. That's a little bit of a mouthful. Good job I had lots of tea this morning. She brings over 20 years of experience in oil and gas, in renewables and pipelines, and she is a passionate lady, passionate about global energy transitions and the implementation of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and obviously the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. So she helps STEM, which, for those who aren't familiar with the acronym, science, technology, engineering, and math-focused organizations, move forward in operationalizing Indigenous inclusion. And with so much focus in the last few years on truth and reconciliation, this is where the commission is really called to action, and Deanna is right in the center of that. She has recently worked on initiatives as an instructor and subject matter expert to indigenize, I love that word, indigenize the curriculum through a pilot project with SAIT and Innotech Alberta, and that was involving training 60 Indigenous students in pipeline monitoring. So great initiative.
Yes, yeah.
And also worked with the National Energy Board, assisting with their Indigenous Advisory Monitoring Committees. So you've lived in a few different places around the world, expat from Singapore, and I want to dive into your story in just a moment, because there's so much to share here. I mean, you're a formerly trained pianist, vocalist, musical theater performer, which led to your belief that incorporating arts and science, technology, engineering, and math will engage future diverse perspectives into STEM, making STEAM. And I'd love to explore a little bit later about the IndigiSTEAM initiative, because that sounds like one heck of an initiative to help with youth. So Oh, I'm so glad you could join me. Oh, I forgot to mention, you're also the recipient of the 2019 Evolutionary Business Council's Unstoppable Award and the 2018 American Indian Science and Engineering Society's Blazing Flame Award and a 2017 Women of Inspiration Award for being a trailblazer in STEM and All Week Magazine's Rising Star 2015. So no doubt you're in the right place here on the Words, Women and Wisdom Show, showcasing amazing women who are doing fantastic things both in the community and for their globe as well, for humanity. So let's hear a little bit about your story, because I know you've gone through a number of experiences growing up that showcase your resilience. And this is where my listeners really gain fantastic insight and perspective and confirm that if you're going through something that is a rough patch right now, you can get through it. And Deanna's story will showcase this. If you have live questions as we're going through the interview for Deanna, jot this number down and you can call in with your live questions. 1-888-627-6008. So 1-888-627-6008. All right, Deanna, share with me your story, because you have such an interesting background and an amazing story of rising from chaos to confidence that I think few people are aware of. Tell me about your life growing up and why it was a challenging time.
Sure, yeah. So I was adopted at 5 months old to two wonderful parents. I was adopted out of my First Nations community culture. I'm considered part of what in Canada we refer to as the 60s scoop, which really was a time that went on into around the 80s, where it was a government initiative to place Indigenous children in non-Indigenous families. And so it wasn't until much later in my life that I realized how much I had missed from a cultural connection piece, as even though I was, you know, loved and cared for by my parents. And when I was young, my dad was transferred to Singapore, so I lived overseas until I was almost 11. And then by the time I got into high school, I was really struggling, and I ended up having my son in high school, so I didn't quite finish high school. And so by the time I was 22, I found myself a single mom. My ex-husband had left and didn't have a high school diploma, and I was working several part-time jobs and really struggling to sustain and support my child. I decided at that time to go back to school and finish my high school diploma, and my son was about 18 months old at the time. And when I did, I also found my birth mother, and that's when I started down the journey of reconnecting with my Indigenous the Indigenous side of me, which is Cree Dene, and learning a lot more about the history and our history and trauma and intergenerational trauma and how it impacts the way we show up in the world. And that just became a 20-year healing journey, both on a emotional point, spiritual point, and really finding my own voice. I also realized when I just did my upgrading that I love math and science. And if you had met me in high school, you know, my dream would have been to be a music teacher or a drama teacher or be on Broadway. So naturally, I chose chemical engineering when I finally decided to go to post-secondary.
I can see the correlation.
Well, my focus had completely pivoted because I had this, you know, beautiful little child that I had to keep in mind. And so, to be honest, when people ask me, why did you choose chemical engineering? the honest truth is, at the time, I took the government career information that you could get in the binders, because we didn't have Google as much that back then, and picked the shortest time in school with the highest demand and potential salary, which was chemical engineering technology. As I prayed, the year I graduated with my chemical engineering technology diploma, the movie Erin Brockovich came out, which, if you haven't seen it, is a true story about decisions that were made by a large energy company that contaminated groundwater in Hinckley, California. And it's a true story that they are still working to clean up from. And so that, because my dad was already in oil and gas and I was familiar with the industry, it really felt like a call to action for me. I saw a place where I could really make a difference. And I ended up spending 20 years in my career focused on environmental compliance and sustainability and just really doing things better as an industry.
Well, what I noticed when I was just refreshing yesterday, looking at your website, indigeneering.com, was, you know, that you have your values based on the seven sacred teachings of indigenous peoples right there. So love, yes, respect, courage, honesty, wisdom, humility, and truth. And, you know, you definitely, what you just shared with me is such a true representation of living and breathing and being all of those values in the work that you're doing and the vision that you have for how you can continue to help environmental concerns be discussed in a manner that is in alignment with planet Earth and, you know, that balance between economic benefit and the environmental concerns. So thank you for your dedication. You know, 20 years of your career based around compliance. I mean, that itself is worth celebrating. So thank you for doing that work. Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, as far as trends, you know, what are you seeing now in terms of trends? What sort of some of the newest conversations that you've been getting involved with, you know, in light of COVID, you know, where are we going to go post-COVID, do you think, as far as environment and economy?
Oh, that's a big question that I think about every day. I mean, mm-hmm. In some cases, you know, I think there will be a huge blessing coming out of this experience that we're having globally, because we are all getting the opportunity to really be in a different way, in a new way. We're realizing that we can, you know, we can have a lesser footprint on the planet. We can make more conscious choices in what we do and how we do it. And I truly hope this gives people the opportunity to think about their own personal place in the world, and what are actions do and the impact that they have on other people, on society, on the environment, and as a whole.
Yes, I am looking at this, you know, certainly with great sensitivity to all of the people that have been working on the front line so diligently. Thank you for your service. All of those who are working on a cure, you know, for those of us who have been, you know, trying to hold a positive space where everyone can catch their breath and breathe, and acknowledging that we're all, you know, we're all in this, but we're all impacted in such different ways. And yet it is such a great time of reflection. And for those organizations that weren't thinking right away, didn't have their business continuity strategy in place to have their workers being at home right away, there was a great opportunity in that 1 or 2 weeks of somewhat disorganization for everyone to kind of catch their breath and say, wow, I'm not at work. And my kids aren't out of school yet, so, have some time to think about what's going on, what's really important to me, how do I stay home, stay safe, and still capitalize on the opportunity. So for me, I mean, I do a lot of work globally already, working on the phone, on Zoom with my clients in different geographies. So it hasn't been too difficult of a transition. And in fact, there's been opportunities that have come out of it. So, you know, I started doing a Women in Wisdom Connect call every couple of weeks on a Friday, bringing women together, women and entrepreneurs and leaders and founders who want to have a chance to have discussion with other positive women. If they're not finding those people in their community, come together on a call and do some brainstorming, and let's see if we can address whatever questions are on your mind. So that was an example of an opportunity that just, you know, bubbled up because of COVID. So opportunities are all around us when we start looking for them. So I'm curious about your work as a instructor and subject matter expert. So that's something that you just started a little while ago. So what have you been learning about yourself as an instructor as well?
Well, it's interesting because I have been teaching since 2005 or 2006, just part-time, and done curriculum development and teaching classes online, predominantly focused on oil and gas. And then recently with the Truth and Reconciliation calls, the 94 calls to action that came out in 2015 after many interviews and listening to the stories of residential school survivors, one of the calls to action was to bring more Indigenous perspectives into education. And I saw my passion as an Indigenous woman. I saw the opportunity to actually bring my whole self to the education conversation. And after that experience at State, I ended up being offered a full-time position. And now with the University of Calgary, I've joined the Faculty of Engineering as an instructor, and I've been appointed teaching chair focused on integrating Indigenous knowledge into engineering. And so I'm working on several national and international working groups that are looking at how do we transform the engineering profession? How do we make it more inclusive? How do we bring different ways of knowing that is going to make us all better engineers and change the development landscape in the future?
Well, because so many of my listeners are women, I have to ask about your experiences. You know, what are some of the myths that you've had to overcome as a female engineer, let alone layering on top of Indigenous female engineer? What could be helpful for some of the girls or women listening that might be contemplating a career in engineering?
I would say don't avoid allowing someone else to tell you what an engineer should be or how an engineer should behave or what kind of personality an engineer has, because I spent 20 years feeling like the square peg in a round hole. I'm a very expressive, enthusiastic, dramatic, connecting, relationship-focused, intuitive person. And I spent my whole career trying to be something I wasn't. And I realized that when I brought my full self to the table and allowed myself to ignore the people that some would directly say to me, you know, that behavior is not professional. And I finally found my voice. It took about 15 years in oil and gas. I finally found the voice to say, well, being professional is very important to me, so can you please tell me how that is not professional? As opposed to, you know, internalizing it. And
yeah.
Then I took it one step further, and I tried to help those that felt that way understand how they were. That was unconscious bias. They had an unconscious bias that you know, a professional person is stoic. A professional person is not friendly with their, you know, subordinates. I always had a very collaborative approach to leadership. And it wasn't until I found the courage to say, hey, that's my strength. And to be that and to show and to, you know, demonstrate how being my best self will get results and will create the teams that thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think fondly of, you know, the organizing of a karaoke night, for example, you know, and you mentioned, you know, your drama and theater and some of your other passions, and yet making a very, very smart choice to say, what is it that I need to do in my career that is the shortest end game, you know, the shortest route to the end game? And, you know, to have a career in theater or singing isn't probably going to be as stable and lucrative for a single mom as going into chemical engineering. And I do believe in divine timing. And so it's probably no fluke that the Aaron Brockovich movie came out. Obviously, a lot of people were impacted and touched in a variety of ways, angered somewhat by that movie. And yet, what a beautiful opportunity. So in light of what you shared just now about the unconscious bias piece, was there some sort of event, like a turning point or a point of awakening? Did something happen to help facilitate that that awareness?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I had the awareness of unconscious bias. I had just so much fear of calling it out. I had been conditioned to not speak up because I would be that woman. I'm just speaking freely. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. There's only, I don't know how many, you know, people are listening. We're on radio, so.
I'm the same person, whether we were sitting in my living room or I was on stage. And that's, I think, that's something that I really enjoy about my career now and having the opportunity to speak to larger audiences and say things that I wish were said to me. And I really, you know, I didn't understand the dynamics of equity, diversity, and inclusion and intersectionality. I just understood that I didn't do very well in toxic workplaces. But there was a turning point at one time. I can remember I had broken 5 teeth in a matter of weeks in my sleep because I was so stressed out about that my current work, my work situation at the time. And I realized that I didn't want that to be my life. Mm. I got pneumonia 3 times in a year that year.
Mm.
And breaking my 5th tooth in my sleep was the end point. That was my, and it wasn't like it broke me, it woke me. Oh, I like that.
Ooh, there's something you want to do in the next talk.
I gotta write that down. I have ADHD. I'm going to forget that in like 5 seconds.
Well, there'll be a recording of this, so you can make that later.
Fantastic. Well, and that's another thing. I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD until I was 36. And I started to realize that, you know what, I just think differently. There's nothing wrong with me. It's actually something that makes me such a bigger picture thinker and you know, more creative in my approach to things. And when I look back on my career for 20 years, I was the change. I was a change agent. You know, when a regulation changed and we needed to change the way we did business because of an environmental or compliance issue, I was the first one to, okay, well, what do we need to do? And how do we need to do it? And then out in the field teaching. So yeah, it's a bit of a sidebar, but I realized when I broke my fifth tooth that I have all these gifts. And right around that same time, I heard a quote from Steve Farber. I was listening to a female senior executive from Enbridge, and she quoted Steve Farber, and she said, "Do what you love in the service of people who love what you do." And I was at a women's networking lunch when she said this, and I burst into tears because I realized I wasn't doing either. And
yeah,
that's when I made the choice to leave oil and gas and start my own firm and create the engineering company I wanted to work with.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you did. And as I'm listening to your story here, I can definitely see some similarities and find it so interesting that, you know, sometimes it takes, you know, the universe will, you know, put a 2x4 on our head several times before we actually get the message that it's time for something different. And laid out with pneumonia 3 times, I mean, you have a lot of time to be not working, not feeling great, and thinking time. And I remember getting food poisoning on one occasion and realizing that, you know, there was something going on that my body was trying to tell me, and I had a lot of thinking time, a lot of agony, right, but a lot of thinking time over a 2 or 3 day period when that happened. You mentioned about the 5 broken teeth. I had a similar experience, Deanna, when I was getting ready to shift how I was working as well. My previous company was called The Shattered Ceiling, which was a great name for women. I mean, they got it right away because it was all about striving and breaking through and reaching new heights of success. And yet the energy behind it was definitely one of aggressiveness. And I ended up working, doing a contract. You know, I was doing some stuff in oil and gas, which isn't my normal, working with a VP for an oil and gas firm. And I ended up getting so frustrated with the experience that I burned myself out. I mean, I realized I'd been chasing, you know, big contracts that were well paid, but it wasn't nourishing my soul, much as you know, you heard in the message about, you know, doing what you love in service of what you do. And for me, it was about taking a few steps back, getting back in touch with myself, taking some Reiki training, taking some energetic resonance coaching, and really evaluating, you know, what was I doing? Where were my gifts? Who was appreciating them? And then rebranding under the brand of Flourish, which had a whole different energy of growth and natural expansion, and it rhymed with nourish.
I love that.
It just felt so different, and it was like a breath of fresh air, literally. And that came about after 5 experiences all in one day of breaking glass all around me. 5
Oh,
things.
Wow.
I dropped a ball, a glass feng shui ball that I was cleaning in the sink in another glass, and it broke. My son dropped a glass off the counter. I dropped a mirror on the bathroom floor. I mean, it was 5 things all in one day.
Wow.
And eventually I just stood at the end of the day looking up saying, okay, I'm listening. It's something to do with broken glass here. What is it?
Wow.
Yeah. You know, time for change. So how have these experiences shaped your wisdom on the resilience of women?
I think one of the things that really stands out for me in terms of women and resilience is the amazing women I've met along the way, and those that have inspired me, supported me, connecting with the women in the Evolutionary Business Council, connecting with amazing women with Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, and the women that I've connected with in engineering circles. And I just find that we show up a lot differently now than we did 10 years ago. I've seen a shift. I've seen a shift in, there seems to be more and more women that are willing to show up as our whole selves. I felt like four different people. If you had met me, you know, even 5 years ago, I had professional Deanna, I had spiritual learner student Deanna, I had Indigenous reconnector Deanna, which is a whole other identity journey, because it's really hard reconnecting when your culture was taken from you. But I had so many different, I got to the point where I would go into spaces that brought these different pieces together, and I didn't know who to be. I realized that I was just exhausted trying to figure out how, what part of me to show up or to show. And that became my goal, was to really reintegrate all the parts of me and find the courage to show up as me.
Yeah, so, so important. And particularly with Reiki training, during that, well, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago now, you know, that whole concept of aligning your energy is so, so important. And I very often have these conversations with my clients. You know, sometimes they're looking for something that's more rewarding, more purposeful in their life. Maybe it's a different job. Maybe it's, you know, shall I step out? Is it time for me to step out and do my own thing? And to really be encouraging them to, you know, take some time, go sit somewhere by, you know, out in nature, preferably by water, where you're free to think, have your journal, and just reflect on what is it that really makes your heart sing? What brings you joy? What are some of the past projects that you feel extremely proud that you actually worked on it, or you completed it, or there was something that touched the community about it? You know, what were those high points, and how can you have more of those? And if that is bringing it into your work, so it's not just, you know, yeah, I work like a dog during the day and then I have these high points in the evening. No, we're going to spend 40 hours, you know, many of us, 40 hours a week, you know, 5 days a week, do what you love, because the money will come. And, you know, that's something that I learned a long time ago. But sometimes it's hard to figure out, well, what is it that I love and what is it that I can monetize? And so I was thrilled to see how you've been able to bring together all of these various experiences and tap into the wisdom that you have with what's needed today. You know, the whole piece about reconciliation, I mean, obviously you were right in the tornado of that, and yet finally it is getting a little bit more attention. And so great, you can, you know, speak to your personal experience and the impact, as well as talking about bringing that together with the environment and the economic factors and how all these pieces knit together. So what a beautiful tapestry you can create when you are in your wholeness.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
so what
I
kind
love,
of oh go ahead.
I was just I love that when I did that, I actually created a space to help others do the same. So I'm working with organizations that are trying to understand inclusivity and inclusion and intersectionality, that are trying to create more welcoming spaces. I love working with organizations wherever they are in that journey to help in a place where I really focus on cultivating the opportunity to be vulnerable and to learn without fear of shaming or judgment in that space, because we're all on a different path, and we're all at a different level in terms of understanding these things. And when we're afraid of fear, when we're afraid of judgment or shaming, you hold back. You hold back the opportunity to really grow and change and understand things.
Right. Well, that is the essence of inclusiveness. And you know, you have so much credibility when you are hosting and facilitating those conversations. I had another lovely guest a little while ago, Peggy O'Neill. I'm not sure if you know Peggy from EBC. She's 3'11", I think. And she talks with organizations about diversity and inclusiveness from a different, you know, from a different lens because mm-hmm. of her personal experience. So when she shows up and someone is, you know, talking about not being inclusive, I mean, there's no way that you cannot listen to her message because she might be small in stature, but she sure is powerful in her voice. Just a quick reminder, if you're listening and you have questions, something Deanna has prompted that you wanted to ask about, you can call in live. It's 1-888-627-6008. So I know that you've got a new initiative happening right now. We're all, as entrepreneurs and business owners, being forced right now to look at new opportunities, which is, for some it's refreshing and for some it's terrifying. But for you, you've come out with something that is supportive of the environment and also extremely needed right now. So tell me about your latest initiative.
Yeah, thanks. So I've been working with essential oils and aromatherapy for going on 20 years, but really for myself. And when COVID happened, and I'm, you know, I hear stories of First Nations not having access to clean drinking water, but in addition are having trouble accessing hand sanitizer, I decided to look into making my own. So I did a number of different test runs with ingredients, and I knew at the time my hands were already starting to dry out because the hand sanitizer is pretty drying. So I was mm-hmm. working with ingredients that would also kind of nourish at the same time. And then I found out that Health Canada had, like, you have to have approval to sell or even donate hand sanitizer. It's regulated. I have 20-year experience as a chemical engineer in regulations and ISO quality management systems, so I thought, hey, I could do this. And so I started down the application process and just received approval yesterday. So my initiative, I've called the Hand Sanitizer Indigeneered Solutions, and it includes essential oils that I selected carefully, not only to address the physical skin dryness, but to also help stress relief and, you know, uplifting, all these things, because we're, as a globe, feeling a lot of stress right now. So I thought maybe I can make this a dual purpose thing if we're using it all day long. And I've been gifting it to elders and really getting their feedback. It's important to me that if I do things in a good way. And my goal is, for every 5 bottles that I sell when I'm ready, I'm going to donate one to Indigenous youth, elders, and communities. And hopefully we'll be able to raise some money to keep our Indigenous youth programming going. We've been delivering, we being Indigenous Team, my nonprofit, we've been delivering summer camps for, this would have been our 10th year, and we've had to cancel it due to COVID. So we're trying to pivot online. But because of the nature of the state of the economy, we've relied on donations to run our camps. And so we're pivoting a lot of things right now. We're trying to figure out how to support the youth that are, you know, at home, that can't go to camp. So we're talking about sending kits that have science projects that also have some of the necessities, essentials, like hand sanitizer and snacks. And, you know, how do we support the youth in this difficult time? So it's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. So congratulations on getting the approval. And again, divine intervention. What a perfect way to leverage your chemical engineering and bring it together with a passion for a specific mission-inspired purpose. I love hearing those kind of stories. Thank you so much for sharing about that. That gives me a lump in the throat.
Oh, it's exciting because a lot of my hobbies are now driving a lot of, you can't see me, but I'm using air quotes, a lot of my hobbies, a lot of the things that, you know, like you mentioned, you work 40 hours and then you come home and you do the things that light you up. I'm being able to integrate those into chemical engineering, into my work. It's really, really cool. And I have the home laboratory I've always dreamed of.
So are you also engaging with Indigenous youth regarding the packaging, or you haven't even got to that point yet? But you just
I haven't got to that point, but my dream is, you know, if it grows, when it grows, that I'll be able to hire, like, we have an Indigenous STEM student club at the University of Calgary that we started this year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our, you know, a lot of our students have had their summer jobs canceled because of COVID. Right. I would love to, like, find some space at the University of Calgary and hire Indigenous STEM students to come make this with me.
Well, you'll see. I hope you're listening, because, you know, certainly what a great initiative and a great way to tie in the fact that, you know, you have the space, and this is an initiative that not only helps the environment and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which are kind of, for me, like ground zero baseline values for how the planet can benefit, but also to help with that summer employment situation, because, you know, I feel for the students, because, you know, they generally have more challenging times securing employment, unless it's, you know, they're doing it as a volunteer, but to actually be on internships or, you know, paid initiatives when there's such a high volume of experienced workers that are looking as well, who can just, you know, step right in and don't have to learn anything and don't need any hand-holding, and yet what a brilliant opportunity to tap into that resource that you have, and also be giving them something hugely valuable, to be showing them how you can use chemical engineering for the greater good. And also, you're probably going to need other things, like, you know, marketing and operations and administration and, you know, some other things which create some fantastic work opportunities for that group. I mean, why wouldn't you
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're learning a new way of being and bringing that into the Faculty of Engineering at UFC. And I've been so supported in my journey there. I started out as the first Indigenous engineer in residence. And after a year, I never thought I would go into academia. And now I'm a faculty member, and I'm teaching in chemical engineering, and I'm doing a master's in engineering education focused on integrating Indigenous knowledge. There's this whole path ahead of me that I never, if you had talked to me 5 years ago, it would never have been on my mind. And so you said earlier something that I'd like to bring up, if you don't mind. You said earlier, when people are deciding that they need to pivot and they don't really know where their passion is or what that next step is. And if I could, I'd just like to say, just find what fires you up and trust. Trust was a big thing that I had to learn in my entrepreneurship journey. I just kept going and I kept learning and I kept applying what I was learning about myself. And opportunities showed up that I never thought possible. So you might not know what it's going to look like in 5 years, but that doesn't mean that it's not amazing.
Well, I think there's a lot of business owners out there that are realizing pretty quickly that, you know, the five-year business plan, you know, I think is for many organizations, especially small entrepreneurs, not feasible. I mean, we don't even know what's going to be happening in a year from now. And yet, when we spend, or not spend, it's investing. when we invest the time to really identify, you know, what are those unique, what is that unique combination of skills, abilities, interests, passions, our qualifications, with the people we love to connect with. I mean, really dive into who do we love connecting with and what lights us up, as you put it. It really does pay off in massive dividends. And I have a number of women that are in my, what I call my Flourish program right now, which is really about helping women to see things from a different dimension by looking at what their current business is offering and how it's either nourishing them or not. Sometimes we need to re-energize, rejuvenate, reflect on it and start, you know, not quite from scratch, but we need to tweak it so that it really is working for you, not the other way around. And sometimes it's new business owners that have an idea and don't yet have the confidence and need to understand. Yes, first you've got to visualize it, then you've got to learn how to monetize it, and then you can optimize it. But if you try to go too far too fast without having that really strong client, you know, ideal client avatar figured out, then it's probably not going to get off the ground. But you don't have to know all the steps. Know the mission, know the destination that you want to get to, and then, as you say, trust. And I think Oprah says it too, you know, just take the next step, because the universe loves action, and the one after will just naturally evolve and unfold when you're heading in the right direction.
Right. And when I learned more about tapping into my intuition, and even that made all the difference, because you take that step and you can feel if it feels right. You can feel, you know, when things seem to happen like, wow, that was really smooth, quick, and easy. I think that's a pretty good sign. And when things feel like they're just not coming together, sometimes we have to listen to that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, sometimes
in saying that, last month in my Women in Wisdom Online Business Book Club, we were looking at a book, one of my favorite books I recommend all the time to clients, called Attracting Perfect Customers, The Power of Strategic Synchronicity. And it talks about, you know, taking that ideal client profile and knowing, you know, who is it I want to work with? And then also, you know, what do they expect of me? And so you really are stepping into your beingness, you know, your full authentic self, in order to be able to serve those kinds of clients and to be able to see very clearly, here's my expertise, here's what makes it different and how you can stand out. And I think if more women invested that time to reflect upon that, it would make a world of difference if we had that level of trust. And it's mm-hmm. hard to do. I know that from my own, you know, after the burnout with the shattered ceiling and the glass, you know, I took 3 months off and I had nothing up on my vision board for about 6 weeks, which for me, who was an ultimate planner at the beginning of the year, was just a really scary place to be. I mean, I had this white vision board staring back at me with nothing on it. And after 6 weeks of nothing coming forward, all I could do is really put up a picture of, you know, a bridge with sort of a yellow brick road winding underneath going somewhere. I had no clue where it was going, and acknowledging that at this point, I guess it wasn't my role to know, and I would just trust and things would naturally unfold, and they magically did. So if someone had said, you'll have a radio show and you'll have a podcast and you'll have a best-selling book and you'll be helping women to elevate their confidence, and, you know, if someone had said that to me 5 years ago, I would have laughed as well.
It's such important work. Thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome. It's a passion to be showcasing amazing women who are doing really interesting things in their community. I've learned so much over the last while since we've been talking here about who you are and how you've evolved and how you've so specifically knitted together all of the beautiful experiences. And I really feel like, you know, things have come full circle for you. Not to say that the circle is complete, because life is not, life is always open moving target, and yet there's a crystallization, a sense of wholeness in your voice and what you're describing just with the sanitizer project. I mean, that seems really complete to me. It feels just naturally the right thing. The world needs it, and you can make such an impact with it. So great initiative. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
And is there anything else that, other than the University of Calgary, supporting your lab there, is there anything else that you need for your Indigenous STEAM initiative? Because I know that you had taken kids over to Dubai, and you've been doing all kinds of interesting things with that over the past 10 years. So what would you need that would really help with that while we've got the last few minutes with the listeners?
If anybody is interested in connecting and learning more about Indigenous STEAM and what we do, I would just love to share. We have really cool events. We have, when we can start doing that sort of thing again, and we have teepee painting nights that we do as fundraisers for our camps and our programming. We host a retreat at the Banff Springs Hotel for Indigenous and non-Indigenous folks wanting to come and be and learn how to be in a different way, how to connect in an Indigenous way. And so if anyone's interested, in, I would love to hear from you and share more about that.
Excellent. So they can connect through your website, indigeneering.com. So IndigEneering.com, or you can simply Google Deanna Burgart, Burgart. There's lots of information on her website about the wonderful work that she is doing, which I'm so pleased and happy to showcase. So please do reach out to Deanna. I'd love to keep in touch and hear more about how the hand sanitizer project is unfolding. And if you're intrigued at all by any of the things that we've shared on the show today, please do feel free to reach out. You can reach out to me through my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com, and it's spelled out A-N-D, wordswomenandwisdom.com. And if you hit the news tab, there's also some information about a couple of the events that I have coming up as well. One that I mentioned coming up this Friday, which is the Women and Wisdom Connect. That's a session on Zoom, so it's Zoom at noon Mountain Time, for opportunity for women entrepreneurs, leaders, and founders to come together and talk through, what's on their mind. Each person walks away, depending on the size of the group, with 6 to 9 brand new ideas using a process that's led by or that's generated by leading coaches around the world that I tap into. And then also this Thursday, I have the Women in Wisdom Online Business Book Club coming up. If you're interested in communication, that's the theme for this 6-month period. The book I'm looking at with my group is What Your Body Says with Sharon Saylor. So if you're a speaker, if you are a leader standing in front of people, if you're in the public eye, period, What Your Body Says is a really intriguing book. Sharon Saylor, thank you for authoring that. And we're going to be learning a lot. That's coming up 7 o'clock Mountain Time, and that's listed on Eventbrite. But it's also shown on my website under the news tab. The links are there for both the Women in Wisdom Connect and also the Women in Wisdom Online Book Club. So thank you for joining me today, Deanna. Is there any last things that you wanted to share before we close our call today?
Just to anyone listening, that the first thing that really changed the trajectory of my life is learning to treat myself with those 7 sacred teachings that I mentioned in my website and as my company values, that love, respect, courage, honesty, wisdom, humility, and truth. And then focusing on my own wellness in a holistic way, and learning how to do that, and then creating spaces, externally that also do that has really brought me to a new level of connection with the people I work with. And I just really love to connect with anyone that that might want to learn more about that.
Lovely. And that topic of creating space, I just want to reflect on that because it's so, so important. And it's one of the first things that I normally end up talking about with my coaching clients. You know, they want to do work together, and yet very often their life is so busy that there's no space to create anything new. It's like going into your closet in the morning and it's so jam-packed with clothes, you can't even see what you've got in there. And so we look, one of the first things typically is looking at paring down, you know, where are you spending your time? And I say spending versus investing it. Spending it, where are you spending it? What can we remove, eliminate, revise? How can we create some space in the calendar? And then we can repurpose that time and start doing some work which has much higher value. So we're really leveraging your time and investing back into you as a person. So having space is so, so important. And I think in this last 10, we're into week 11 here, most of us in Calgary, with things gradually starting now to go into phase one, open up again. But we've really had space automatically created for many of us to have some time and reflection. And that's when those beautiful ideas bubble up, such as your beautiful idea for the hand sanitizer. So thank you for joining me today. If you'd like to reach out, connect with Deanna, you have that invitation. You have an invitation to reach out to me as well through my website. And let's keep in touch and let's keep celebrating the amazing women we have in our community who are doing some radical things and also giving back. It's not solely about making money. It's about doing the things that lift our hearts and connect back so that we're actually here living our greater purpose. So thank you for joining me, Deanna, today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
You too.
Bye for now, everybody.